Welcome to the Church Times podcast. Try 10 issues for £10 or 2 months access to our website and apps also for £10. Go to churchtimes.co.uk/new-reader.
Well, hi, Alex. It's great to have you on the podcast.
Hi, Madeline. It's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
It'd be great for our listeners just to hear a bit about where you're serving at the moment, what your role and your context is.
Well, I'm based in East Lancashire, so I'm as far east as you can go in Lancashire before you get to Yorkshire. I'm in southwest Burnley, which is in an urban setting where we deal with some quite harsh circumstances, people living in high levels of deprivation, high levels of poverty. Around 58% of the children in our church school are on free school meals. So it gives you some sort of context of some of the challenges that we face.
Great. You've got a comment piece for us this week, which is about the working class population and its relationship with the C of E, and in particular, the possibility of raising up more lay and ordained leaders from those contexts to serve in the church. Could you say a bit about why you're sort of personally passionate about this? Because this is something which I know sort of you feel very strongly about.
Well, I'm from the working class. I didn't have the best education. I left school when I was 15 and went straight to work for Currys as a delivery lad. You know, so education in many ways bypassed me. It wasn't necessarily the fault of the state. That was a lot of it was my undoing. You know, I was a mischievous child. I was a habitual truant. I didn't go to school and nobody really knew I wasn't going. I was good at bunking off. But then, you know, as you grow and mature, you evolve, don't you? And you grow up and you become more responsible. And I worked my way up through the retail industry, becoming a store manager for Argos. And in that role, one of my jobs was to highlight people's potential. And I quite often saw people that didn't actually realize they even had any potential. You know, they were walking around the shop doing certain tasks and roles. And I was just thinking, that person's got something about them. There's some talent there that needs to be tapped into. You know, and I know that that's difficult. When somebody tells you you've got some potential, it's difficult. I find that difficult myself. You know, and then entering into the world of ordination training and assessment and all that, more often than not, I felt a complete fish out of water. I thought people were rooting for me, but actually didn't quite get me. And I often felt a little bit insignificant. Looking back, I probably was undervalued. I was kind of a little bit different. And so that's why I really want to be an advocate for people, particularly towards vocations in the church.
You've written about the General Synod commitment to taking the necessary steps to raise up and support a new generation of lay and ordained leaders from estates and working class backgrounds. And in your piece this week, you argue that we'll fail if we give the impression that the church prefers candidates for ordination who are university educated and middle class. Do you think that is the impression that the church gives at the moment?
Yes. I think it is the impression that it gives, and I actually think it's the fact, it's reality. You know, there is a huge imbalance between who is being ordained and who isn't. Now, of course, I understand the church typically or traditionally is quite middle class, but that doesn't mean to say that it always has to remain that way. We can challenge that, and we should be challenging that. After all, I think I put in one of my pieces, you know, we are the church. We're meant to be the Church of England, not the church in it. And if we're the Church of England, then we need to represent everybody.
When we wrote about this commitment, it was in the context of a new report from the Church Army Research Unit. And they've looked at some schemes which various dioceses have piloted to train up urban leaders. And I know you shared a really interesting video online, which was your sort of immediate reaction to that. What sort of things were you hearing from people who responded to your video?
Various things. There was lots of people supporting what I was saying and saying, go on, kind of almost cheerleading, encouraging me to say more. There were people who took me by surprise that somebody said, made a reference to citing, as in citing an essay, and that should perhaps be something that would automatically be taught in school. And I just thought that is, you know, while I understand the comment, I thought was typically indicative of the gap between the working class and the upper class of the Church of England. You know, I asked my own kids when I heard that comment, were you taught to cite reference in school? And none of them were. Mm-hmm. And against that, Madeline, my context, illiteracy is a huge issue. There are a lot of people in my context, grown-ups, who struggle to read and write, and they carry that as almost like a taboo illness, something that they can't talk about. And the consequence of that is it gets passed on, it becomes generational. So if they can't read and write, they're less likely to sit with their children and teach them to read and write. And so it becomes generational. But it doesn't mean these people don't have potential. It doesn't mean they don't have leadership skills. It doesn't mean they can't become leaders in the Church of England. So yeah, it was a sway of good, honest support to some subtle criticism, you know?
Yeah. Right. I think when we've looked at these issues before, I think researchers have tried to highlight this sort of very careful balance that we're trying to strike. We're trying to make formation and pathways open to people from all backgrounds, including people who perhaps don't have sort of higher academic qualification. At the same time, they're saying that we don't want to suggest that because you're from a working class background, you're not capable of academic study, or that you couldn't flourish in a really sort of academic environment. And sometimes it's actually more a question, as you were saying, of sort of confidence or not sort of being accustomed to sort of academic environments rather than actual people's potential or ability. Are you conscious of that sort of tension? Because I know when we've written about it in the past, people have been very quick to say, we don't want to underestimate what people are capable of or imply that academia is solely a kind of middle class enclave.
Yeah, well, listen, Madeline, I have a degree. I'm exceptionally proud of my degree because I left school with zero qualifications, and I mean zero qualifications. How I got a degree, well, God only knows. But I did, and I'm very proud of it. And I see the value in learning. There's nothing better than learning something today that you didn't know yesterday. And I'm absolutely an advocate for people who want to learn. I'm also an advocate to say that there are people in the working classes who are academic. They can pick things up very quickly. But there's also people like myself. You know, frankly, it was an absolute nightmare, the prospect of writing a 4,000-word essay and sat referencing things. And you know, somebody who suffers with dyslexia, so writing is not the easiest thing for me to do. You know, and when you put all that in a big pot, it can be quite demoralising. You know, it can affect your confidence, and it certainly did. You know, and the Church of England being the Church of England, you know, one of the things people used to love to do was celebrate success. And quite often I'd be in a room full of ordinands, and they'd be, oh, I got 72% on my essay. And I was thinking, oh, God, don't ask me what I got, you know? And that's the mm-hmm. truth. Mm-hmm. And at one end, I think even at one point in the bar, I said, can we just make this agreement that we don't talk about your marks? Because, you know, I'm getting 42 and 43, and mm-hmm. to me, that's a success. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, yeah.
Yeah. I know you've been interested in a recent Living Ministry report on the well-being of working class clergy, which sort of went way beyond what we're talking about in terms of formation to sort of every element, I guess, of clergy's lives, their sort of financial well-being, their mental and physical well-being. What sort of in that report do you think really sort of stuck out for you or resonated?
The key thing for me in that report, which is a brilliant report, by the way, I would encourage people to go and check it out, was actually that what I was reading was coming from, I thought I was the only person that felt like this. You know, I thought the only person that felt a little bit devalued, who felt a bit thick at times, who felt not part of the party, as it were. And then you read the report and it's littered with people telling stories of how they were made to feel stupid or how they were feel inadequate. You know, how they were struggling financially to cope with the training, the rigors of training. Now, there's absolutely no way, Madeline, that I could have trained full time. It would have been absolutely impossible. You know, I was earning decent money at Argos, where I was a store manager. To give that up and go and train for ministry with three growing children would have been impossible. Mm. You know, and so some of the things they're suggesting there, some of the changes are really important. You know, I was really disappointed to learn that there's actually no national strategy in the Church of England for the vocations of people from the working classes. And there's actually no statistics at this moment in time. That I know they are starting to gather statistics, but at this moment in time, there's no, we don't actually know who is coming to ordination from the working classes, but we need to, because we need to understand how we can improve things.
Yeah, brilliant. I was wondering if there was somebody in your congregation and you identified their potential and felt that they perhaps had a calling to ordained ministry. Would you feel confident at the moment setting them out on that pathway? I know you're in the Diocese of Blackburn and there's been a real commitment there through Empower and other means, sort of really championed by the Bishop of Blackburn. But how would you feel at the moment about setting them out on that pathway? Would you have any sort of worries?
Yeah, I'd have a lot of reservations. And I think what we're doing in Blackburn Diocese is great. You know, the ALM courses, Empower courses, and we are taking people who perhaps have not had experience of leadership roles, and we are definitely growing and creating leaders, which is wonderful. But actually putting them through the process of selection for ordination, to put them through the process of 2 or 3 year formational training, to put them through a curacy, to consider leaving their home, to consider the rigors of academia, I'd be full of reservations. That wouldn't stop me pushing for them. And I think the church needs to recognise that one pathway doesn't fit all, and we need to find other alternative pathways that will welcome people like this into rigors of academia and learning something today that they didn't know yesterday, but actually also celebrating the gifts that they have, you know, and quite often they are verbal gifts, not literal written gifts. And exploiting those talents, nurturing those talents, and putting them in the right training context with the right people. You know, I've got so many issues around these matters, Madeline. You know, one of the questions I have the church needs to ask itself is, when somebody from the working classes presents themselves for ordination, who are they going to see? What type of DDO are they going to be sat before? Are they going to be sat before a Hooray Henry from Oxbridge, who's going to question them, and immediately they see a tattoo on their arm or a language that perhaps isn't the language they're used to? They're going to say, well, yeah, you're all right, but if somebody from the demographic that I expect comes through, I'll give them precedence over somebody from the working class. You know, and ultimately, Madeline, this comes down to a matter of injustice. This comes down to inequality. You know, the church at the moment is absolutely right in its noise around LLF, around black and minority ethnic groups and the development. But actually, whilst that's absolutely fantastic, the working classes of the United Kingdom fit all those demographics. And it's a huge pool, and it's a huge pool on tap talent that Bishop Jill and I have many different theological differences, but on this, we are absolutely on it. You know, there's rich talent out there that is yet to be excavated. And the sooner it gets excavated, it can only be for the benefit of the Church of England.
I know one of your suggestions in your piece is having more diversity in terms of socioeconomic background, in terms of who is assessing candidates. And you talk in your piece about how you were supported in your journey. Just thinking back to perhaps putting someone forward from your parish or your area for discernment, what would help, do you think, to have in place that would give you more confidence about setting them out on that journey?
I think a national strategy would be very helpful. I think diocesan strategies would be very helpful. So, you know, when somebody from the working classes comes forward, we're not going to make it up as we go along. We're not going to fudge it. We're going to kind of make them feel quite important, even though they probably won't get through. We're going to have a defined way of working that this is what's going to happen. And if we know they're going to be uncomfortable in a certain context, you know, Joe Bloggs or Mary Jones will be specialists in that area, and they will take those people and nurture them and encourage them. One of the greatest gifts my training incumbent gave me was something I learned, was the gift of being nurtured, not being told or taught but nurtured, given, asked to experience it, go in, do it, and then come back and talk about it. And I think that's a great, perhaps, starting point and strategy for people who feel less confident in going through such a process.
Just lastly, I wanted to ask about General Synod, because I know you've been elected to represent your diocese, and one of your sort of passions is giving a voice to people from the working classes, so not having people speak on their behalf. What's your experience of General Synod as a place where you can have a voice more of a national stage?
Well, I don't want to be too unkind to General Synod, because I've met some very lovely and kind people, but in the whole, I do feel dreadfully out of place there. You know, I do feel why I'm on it, and I've thought about walking away so many times. People keep saying to me, you're there to represent the people that you keep talking about, so you can't walk away. And I won't walk away, and I'll stick with it. But its processes are very painful to be part of. The conversations are long-winded, and of course they need to be. Some things need talking through, but sometimes we just talk for talking's sake. Not an awful lot gets achieved there. The working classes very rarely gets talked about. It was talked about at the last synod, and I was pleased to see a full chamber, but I've been in conversations before when we talk about the cost of living crisis or poverty, where the chamber's half full, which tells me that not enough people care. And we need to care, you know, because if you're fortunate, if you're listening to this and you're fortunate not to be in the same context as I work, although I don't feel unfortunate to be there myself, I feel it's an absolute blessing. You will recognize that for many people outside the London bubble, life is very difficult and life is very tough, and the church needs to speak into that. It's rooted in Jesus's Sermon on the Mount. It's rooted in the Beatitudes. It's rooted in loving one another, and we need to do better. We need to do better, and we need to speak out for the marginalised, for the working classes, and make them part of this incredible institution that we're all part of.
Thank you. I know you'll be talking more about this on your channel. Do you just want to give people a few details of where they can find that?
Yeah, I host a Godcast podcast, which has been a joy for me to do. And you know, what I love about that is it's a very broad church. There are academics on there. There are professors and doctors, but there are people from the working classes. There are footballers. There are politicians, musicians. And just Google the Godcast and you'll find me there. So, yeah, thank you. Thank you, Madeline.
Lovely. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Church Times podcast. You can find more news, analysis, comment and book reviews on our website, churchtimes.co.uk. If you are not yet a subscriber to the Church Times, you can try your first 10 issues for just £10. You'll get the paper delivered to your door every Friday, plus full access to our website and digital archive. Go to churchtimes.co.uk/subscribe to find out more.